Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I'm filmmaker Kira Gardner, and this is my special effects makeup artist dad, Tony Gardner.
I am still Tony Gardner.
And that's still Tony Gardner. Happy October.
Yay.
We bring you another episode that is Halloween themed, and we are breaking it up into two parts this month, talking about the 1993 film Hocus Pocus. In part one of our Hocus Pocus episodes, we talked more about Doug Jones and how my dad discovered his look for Billy Butcherson. But we forgot to talk about a very important scene involving Billy Butcherson. I think my dad and I were a little too distracted by all the airplanes flying over my apartment that day, but there's a scene towards the end of the movie in the cemetery where Billy Butcherson has a knife to Max, and we think he might hurt him, but instead he uses it to rip open the stitching in his mouth, and a bunch of moths come out as he coughs them up. This gag is 100% real. Those are real moths, and this was done completely practical. I would be sad if I didn't mention that. And I used to be able to find a behind-the-scenes feature where they showed more insight into how they did this, but I can't for the life of me find this clip anymore on the internet. It must be a special bonus feature on a different Blu-ray than what I have, but if anybody can find it, let me know because it's really great. You would not be able to do this with real moths today in this day and age of filming, but I just wanted to let everyone know that was real, and what my dad's team did on that day was they took the black lace stitching on Doug Jones' mouth, and they just re-glued it lightly on the stitching each take so that he would be able to easily, quote-unquote, cut the stitching out, and then the moths would fly out. But let's get back to part two of our Hocus Pocus episode and get back to Binks. By the way, the name Binks was created by David Kirshner, the producer, by combining the word black and ink, and that's how you get Binks. Also, my family has a black cat that we rescued when I was in high school, and her name is absolutely Binks. Does not matter that she's a girl. Her name is Thackeray Binks, and we love her. But let's get back to our Binks puppet.
Do you know in the movie when is the first time we see the puppet?
I don't know which scene it is exactly. I would have to look for it.
Because when Max is in the Sanderson sister house, the cat comes and jumps on him. It's real quick, though. I think it's the majority of that's just a real cats. But then the cat again in that first iteration attacks Bette Midler, and she holds it kind of for a second. That seems like it's a cat puppet.
Yeah, we had, besides the animatronic ones, we had some stunt ones for like jumping. If the cow was going to jump on somebody, they're going to swing around or whatever, then it would be like one of the posable ones or one of the floppy ones. Then we also had an inflatable cat.
The inflatable cat. Walk us through that. You had to kill a cat on this movie. You had to kill a cat puppet. And so Binks gets ran over by a bus, and it's sad, and you think he's dead, but then you remember he can't die. That was part of the magic, and he is all flattened, and then he inflates, and he's okay. How did you do that?
Well, we had the mold of the animatronic cat, so we cast all the parts of the cat in slip latex like a balloon.
Oh.
So it was basically like a balloon, and then it was furred and whiskered and the whole deal. And he was supposed to be dead, so we had made the eyes closed, so they were furred over. So it was really easy to do. And what we learned was it's still, because it was so small and the shapes were so rounded, for lack of better terms, it still wanted to hold its shape. So we actually had to like attach it to an airline and pull a vacuum to get it to flatten.
Oh.
And then reinflating it was just letting the air back into it. Oh. And then they still thought it looked like a real cat had died. So they, if you watch it, when it reinflates, there's like a... there's like a sound effect to make it...
less
more
sad.
Family friendly.
Oh, you killed the cat too well.
And by the way, we recently discovered that it's Jason Marsden who actually does this sound effect. He's inhaling super hard and high-pitched. He commented on our Instagram of the podcast and let us know that it was actually not a sound effect and his own voice.
And then when the cat's dead and for real at the end, it's just the one of the floppy ones that we made. But we also had a lighting one, like a posable lighting one, so they could set up shots and not have to use the real cat. And I think Larry kept that one in it. Traveled with him as a lighting setup cat. Had a long, more lustrous career than the other cat puppets.
I see. And they still have a Binks skin head at my dad's shop. There's a piece of Binks that lives on to this day.
Yeah.
It looks kind of creepy, actually. But
well, it's the head skin minus the eyes in it. It was a spare skin from set, so it's ancient at this point. I bet if you touch the ears, they'd probably crumble because they're foam latex.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it doesn't age well. It oxidizes.
Oh.
So if you paint it, you can seal it, but it's getting air from the other side, the inside.
You can really see the Binks puppet in the final showdown in the cemetery because there's so much action the cat's doing. They got a lot of cats, real cats, to do a lot of these crazy actions. But once Binks runs up this tree and jumps onto the broomstick and attacks Bette Midler, and then she throws the cat and it like takes a tumble, I can see it's your copycat, is so sad because it just looks like lifelike, the weight that it has to it. It's really sad.
Yeah. That was a weird balance. I mean, it was making stuff not too sad and not too scary. But like you said, they're hanging the witches in the beginning. But you don't see their faces.
You don't see their faces.
You just see their legs.
Yes. And then people walk away. And their reactions to it aren't like crazy because they didn't like the witches. So
right.
I need you to debunk a myth for me right now.
Okay.
On the air. So I got dragged through TikTok like a few years ago because people claim that the puppet from Sabrina the Teenage Witch is the same black cat puppet from Hocus Pocus. Can you please tell the people that that is not true?
That is not true.
Thank you. You see, TikTok, I was correct.
The Sabrina producers asked me to come look at their puppet that they already had because they wanted to figure out how to make it more lifelike, and because they had seen our cat in Hocus Pocus. So they called me up and asked me to go to set and look at the puppet and just give my suggestions and advice. And that was the extent of any sort of overlap whatsoever.
And if y'all pay attention, they are entirely different puppets. Yeah. Salem is majority a hand puppet and is sitting on stuff where somebody's hand would be able to go through, say, the table on a set or things like that and operate the puppet. So they're also completely different operations.
Ours was a lot skinnier and had a longer neck, and all the movements were cable operated for the body. So there's all these cables that come out the back end of the cat and go into the ground or wherever to a bank of motors. And then we could puppeteer from right by camera with the radio controllers so that we could make sure it worked.
You were prepping for Chucky like so early on in your career.
That's why David Kirshner remembered me when it came time for... He was pitching Bride of Chucky, actually.
And, oh, right.
And he's like, I know you can do animatronic stuff, but we have somebody else that is already on board this franchise, but I want to pitch an idea, and would you build a Chucky holding a Tiffany? It was basically a giant cake topper standing in an arch like a wedding cake topper that he could take into meetings and pitch Bride of Chucky with. He said, if the person that we normally use isn't available, you know, they have first right of refusal, but if they're not available or don't want to do it, we'll definitely let you know. Well, he eventually came to me and said, we got a green light on it, but the other person's going to do it. But he remembered me down the road when
it didn't
work
out.
It was time to do Seed of Chucky and he needed somebody to step in it.
Wow, there's a world where you almost were doing Bride of Chucky.
There was the potential for it.
And speaking towards keeping things family friendly in Disney with Hocus Pocus, so let us go over Headless Billy Butcherson. At one point in the cemetery, he's chasing the kids, and then Max pulls back a tree branch and whacks his head off and decapitates him. There is a wig worn by a person, and that person is my Aunt Karen. Hi, Aunt Karen. Hey, girl. How you doing? She was in the rig and played that character.
It's not really black magic that keeps him going. It's stuntwoman Karen Malkus, hidden inside a special suit.
See you on set.
Could you talk to us about how you made the rig?
Sure. Well, the idea was, how do we get something to move without a head and still have it look proportionate to Doug and be able to not just like wander around, but actually crawl around on all fours and still look proportionate. And we talked about a puppet for like 10 seconds. And then we're like, why don't we just get somebody who's like a foot shorter than Doug and build a rig where they have no head and build up the shoulders and cheat the arm length and stuff like that through the wardrobe? Because we had already done this movie called Freaked for Alex Winter, where we did a character that basically had a sock puppet for a head that was a person wearing a skull cap with an animatronic hand on top of their head and the same exact body shape. And Karen Malkus was the actress that we had hired to do Sockhead for Freaked. And it's like, why don't we get Karen do the same rig, and instead of a skull cap with a hand puppet on it, it was literally a puppet of a human hand. Instead of that, let's do it so that there's just a fake head of another person. And can we make it work with the wardrobe and stuff like that? So we were working with Mary Vogt with the costume design ideas. And she gave Billy Butcherson character a shirt that was like a lace, like a cotton that you could kind of see through. And then there was a bow at the front of the collar that was a more open like stitched, or however you make lace.
However you do that.
A more open laced lace. And so Karen wearing the head on top of her head on this skull cap in this rig with the shoulders up to about here on her head, you know, almost to the top of her head. Her eyes were dead center through that
bow.
Neck bow.
Cool.
So she could see enough straight forward. Couldn't really see down. But she had to remember that whatever angle she moved her head at, this other head that's 2 feet above hers is going to be a compound movement way more extreme.
Yeah.
So it was really all about figuring out how to make it work and be able to like turn the head left or right, because there was so much height in Doug's neck and then the head and then the hair. So for Karen, it was really all about figuring out where the center of gravity was for the character versus her, because we also had her up on lifts.
Oh, to be a little bit taller.
To get her up a little taller. And then we had these sort of shin guards on her that had like rods that came off the tops of those, with another kneecap up above higher than hers, so that when she bent her knees, the knees would bend at the right height for Doug. And then Mary designed the coat with these sleeve openings from the coat to the sleeve that were really low and really wide, so that if you were shorter and you had to stick your arms into the sleeves of the coat, you could actually get them in, and the bagginess of the coat helped disguise the fact the sleeve was so big and that we were cheating it. And then Karen also wore these gloves that were Doug's hands, and we had added some length on Doug's hands, so it made her automatically proportionate. So if you stood them next to each other, it totally worked.
Right up to each other.
Yeah. There's a scene where the witches have to fly. Bette Midler's flying at Doug Jones after they've argued. You know, he's standing in the cemetery. She's on her broomstick above because she can't land on cemetery ground. So she's got to fly to him, which is being controlled by somebody else. And she's holding this broomstick, and she's got to pivot and kick him in the kick Doug Jones in the head. So it's Karen in the rig with the fake head. And we had used earth magnets to connect the stump of the head to the stump of the neck, so that it was an easier disconnect, but it meant you had to like
hit it
with some force.
Yeah.
So Karen, she's an actress and a dancer, and everybody's like, oh, you need a stunt person to do this. Mm-mm. By the time we got to shoot that part, Karen had already done everything else that was crazy, and they're like, this girl's got it.
Yeah.
She's really nailed it, so let's give her space. And Karen stood there, and she's like, you know, looking up at Bette Midler, and I think she did some takes with her arms down and some with her arms up, and she was really fearless, and they just drove Bette at her, and Bette hauled off and punted her head off each time. And then
she not only
had to hold still for that so that it lined up, then she had to like fall to the ground and then try and find her head and crawl around with those weird leg rigs and everything.
That's
else.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and she was fantastic. She was really
also
amazing.
If Bette missed, maybe Karen would get kicked in the face.
That's what everybody was worried about, because it wasn't just her and her height and figuring out the pivot of a swing.
It's a lot.
It's somebody else's controlling the height of her whole body in the air and the speed she's moving.
But if Bette did kick her in the face, that'd be a good story.
An unbelievable story.
Well, I mean, not for the production, but then
Aunt Karen could be like, yeah, I broke my nose once because Bette Midler like kicked me in the face.
That's interesting because so I am very similar height and weight to my aunt when she played Headless Billy Butcherson. And when they went to do Hocus Pocus 2, which we'll talk about in another episode, I auditioned to be Headless Billy Butcherson because we were the same size. And they started, my dad's team started building this rig. And it was really cool to get that experience of the skull cap and he, exactly what he's saying, like the magnets of the head on the head is like there's some weight to it. So you also kind of have to move your weight so that it helps the magnets disconnect. And I unfortunately didn't get the role, but I ended up wearing the rig for a zombie like yard decoration, Halloween yard decoration in Marlon Wayans's Curse of Bridge Hollow, which is on Netflix right now, so go give it a watch. The Halloween decorations come to life, and there's this zombie character that Priya from Stranger Things, she comes and knocks his head off with a shovel. So I'm the decapitated version of the zombie, and I have a very short fall. But I worked with the stunt team, who were amazing, and even then, like, elbow pads, knee pads, and they wanted me to wear a mouth guard too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that in case I hit my jaw funny on the floor, that I'd be fine, like my teeth would be fine. So I can't imagine Aunt Karen back in 92, if that's when you filmed it, is like just taking fall after fall. She's tough, that girl.
I don't think that the pads were part of her equation. I could be wrong, but I don't recall it.
We'll ask her. We'll get her on the podcast and do do an episode with Aunt Karen. But speaking of Billy Butcherson, how long did it take you to do Doug Jones's look each time he was Billy Butcherson on set?
Because the makeup was pre-painted and all the bodysuit stuff was pre-painted, it took us about a little over an hour.
That's great.
To do the whole makeup. And then the bodysuit went on in like 5 minutes, the gloves went on in a few minutes. The wig was literally, it's all pre-styled, went on, and we just glued around the front. And that, so that was a few more minutes. So it was really all about making it fast so Doug could work and do his thing. And we wouldn't have him wear the hands actually, usually, until he was ready to shoot. And then we would put them on just so that, because they were foam latex, we didn't want.
Yeah, you don't want to break them.
Yeah. And the fingertips were these acrylic cups with like acrylic nails. So they were solid. So you could actually, like, grab things and the nails wouldn't come apart.
Oh, that's smart.
So, yeah. So they were, you know, they were fragile, but they were sturdy. So,
just like me.
Yeah. So it went pretty quick. I feel like Karen getting her in the whole rig was maybe like half an hour.
What was it like working with Doug?
Doug's great. I mean, we became friends on that and have been friends ever since. He's just such a pleasure to work with and so professional in the makeup chair. I mean, part of the reason the makeup goes on so fast is because he knows to hold still and not move and do things when you're gluing around mouths and stuff like that. So working with him was fantastic. And then doing the makeup with Margaret was awesome. So the three of us became really good pals, you know, work together since then whenever we can, really. We like recommended him for every film we were on after that. And I think we got to work together another 13, 14 times.
That's amazing.
Over the years. I mean, and then obviously Hocus Pocus 2 as well.
And brought him back, yeah.
Yeah, which was great to revisit the same makeup. We had actually revisited it a few years prior during COVID.
Yes.
Because Bette Midler was doing that Hocus Pocus Halloween.
Halloween charity special.
Yeah, but it was online. So they wanted to film stuff. So we didn't have any of the molds. We still had Doug's face cast and we had his hand cast and had to like remake everything. All I had was a wig, but Bette wanted us to bring Billy back to life for that because they were going to do the Three Witches as well. And I think that was a big impetus and push towards a sequel actually happening is people seeing the response to what Bette had organized all by herself. And she was doing Winifred in her stage show. Also,
oh, okay.
And we sculpted it for that and realized all the things that we had done differently the first time. And then when it was time to do Hocus Pocus 2, we re-sculpted Billy again and really got into the nuts and bolts of where every single line was because people were going to watch the first film and then watch the sequel back to back. And we're like, we don't want anything jarring.
Yeah.
It should look exactly the same. The hair should look the same. We can't use any like new materials like silicone and upgrade his prosthetics because then they're not going to match. So we tried to be true to everything. I still had the leather stitching from the first film.
Oh, damn.
From the mouth. So, and then Salvador Perez recreated the costume and changed a couple things. But it, for the most part, you know, it was like the same guy again.
It's crazy. I directed the segment with Doug Jones for that charity special. And that was kind of cool just because Hocus Pocus is so many people's favorite movies and childhoods. And especially not getting to go to Hocus Pocus 2, just being able to see Doug do it in real life. I was very intimidated, actually.
Really?
Yeah. No, just because it's like such a great character and it's Doug. And it was the first time like working with him kind of rather than just like being friends. So I was a little like, hey. And also I hadn't done a lot of green screen work at that point in time. And we had to shoot him entirely on a green screen so that they could comp in a cemetery, but there was like no budget not a big budget because it was
all
the charity.
Volunteer,
so we did it in the we did it in my dad's shop and we're like stretching out this giant screen and I'm like, is the wrinkles gonna like come out? It's funny, but Doug, it seems like there's so many great people. Doug Jones, Jason Marston and I are friends on social media. You guys finally met the other year.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He was going to come in on this episode, but he's so booked up for the month of October. So we'd love to revisit with him. He's the nicest. And one more question I have to ask, because it's also my childhood in a different sense, and I'm totally aging myself here. High School Musical, High School Musical 1, High School Musical 2, High School Musical 3, Kenny Ortega.
Uh-huh.
How was it working with Kenny Ortega on Hocus Pocus?
It was great. I thought it was really smart that they brought in somebody with a musical background because movement and music were such a big part of this. I mean, just movement alone, he knew how to create characters and something and create iconic gestures or walks and stuff like that. And he had a choreographer helping him because he was directing now. She worked with them on flying on the broomsticks and trying to create a natural sense of ability to be able to do that and sort of an elegance and a fluidity to the way that they grabbed their brooms and got on them and then moved and then how they worked on the flying rigs so that everything was very organic.
They flew about 4 hours a day in rehearsal, 5 days a week. They flew first individually so that they could each develop their own style and we didn't let them see each other. That way they all could just connect with their broom in their own special way.
The biggest part of the witch's costume are all the different layers of silks and stuff like that so that when they're on their brooms, there's stuff moving and selling that they're flying or even when they're hovering over the cemetery, they're able to put wind, put fans underneath them and have their clothes billowing like they were hovering. They were on these teeter-totter rigs so they could go up and down. It's like, it felt like everything always had like a natural sort of sense of life to it.
Also, I used to be able to find this in behind the scenes of Hocus Pocus, but the way they figured out the witches would fly as well is the lady who was helping coordinate their flying actually went on a drive with all three of the main actresses and paid attention to their driving and had it reflected in the way they flew. I can't remember what she said about Bette Midler, but she said Sarah Jessica Parker was a little bit more careless and free-flowing. You can see this especially when she first sees Billy Butcherson and says hi. She almost kind of falls off her broom because she's so excited. I'm not sure what that says about Sarah Jessica Parker's driving, but with Mary, Kathy Najimy, she's more guarded is what they said, and you can see this in the movie. You can see this when she's flying on her broom. She keeps it closer to her body. I would assume that she's a driver who keeps both hands on the wheel. But getting back to Kenny.
And I think that's where Kenny's background comes in, and then his sense of humor is obvious throughout the whole film.
Do it now!
Wench. Trollop, you buck-toothed mop-rhyme firefly from hell.
Ah, that's
it's
so
really
cool.
A Kenny Ortega movie.
He's so great. Kenny, if you're watching this, we'd love to have you on the pod. Would love to meet you so I could fill my childhood dreams. But that's cool. That's really cool.
Great guy. And really articulate in describing what he wanted and how it worked. And the fact that there were multiple puppeteers making the cat move. I think to him, it was kind of like we were like a little dance team. You could talk to us about the movement that the cat made and stuff like that, and not get into the nuts and bolts of it, but actually talk more as a character performance, which is really great to experience.
Well, is there anything you'd like to add of this experience, this the first film back in the day? Anything to let the audience know?
No, just that if you all make enough noise, maybe they'll get off their butts and make Hocus Pocus 3. As Bette Midler says, before we stop breathing.
That's fair.
There's a script.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they just need to get organized. So
okay. And then also on top of that, petition, if Doug Jones loses his head again, that I get to do it. Because I was so bummed out. I took some falls, man, in that audition. I was committed.
They wanted a licensed stunt person.
They wanted a licensed stunt person, but licensed schmeisens. And I've actually done stunts before. So it was weird. And then I ended up doing stunts on the movie right after that. Right. And then I ended up doing stunts on my own movie that we just shot. So, because they didn't have a stunt person.
Your size.
Yeah, my size. We'll hope to have other episodes about Hocus Pocus, even though we've kind of covered it initially with my aunt or with Jason or maybe Doug, even though I know he's talked about it so much in his lifetime. But even maybe even Kenny, if he's cool and knows that this exists. And then we'll cover Hocus Pocus 2 eventually as well. But we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope you all have a very happy Halloween to those who celebrate. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.